Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen, a cooking store located at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. You can find Feast Your Ears as well as lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes. Follow me on Instagram at feast.yr.ears. Before we get started today, I just wanted to mention that everyone here at Heritage, our thoughts go out to the folks at S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. They're makers of incredible country ham, bacon, and a lot of other things, and a longtime supporter of Heritage Radio, and they suffered a devastating fire at their facility this past Tuesday. Luckily, nobody was hurt. Everyone is safe, but their production has been halted for the time being. So they're in our thoughts. We're all hoping that they'll be back making real food. Real good, real soon. Welcome to episode 17 of Feast Your Ears. In the studio with me today on a chilly January 20th is Kadeem O, founder and head of Mama O's Kimchi. Kadeem grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland, and made the leap into fermented foods in around 2008. Kadeem just got off a red eye, so we're trying to keep him awake, so I'll probably ask a lot of questions. But thank you, Kadeem, for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Harry.
Can you... when you meet somebody, you were just on a plane. I don't know. You know, whenever I sit down on a plane next to somebody, you start talking. Oh, where are you from? What do you do? Mm-hmm. When that happens, what do you tell people?
As far as what I do?
Yeah, when you sit down next to somebody and they're like, oh, who's this guy? What do you know? You guys start chatting and you're like, oh, I live in Brooklyn. And they say, what do you do? What do you tell them?
Oh, well, my stock answer is whatever pays the bills. But then, I hate that to be, being the first question like that. That's like your sole source of identity. But then, when I give them a straight answer, I tell them, I make kimchi. I chop the cabbage and put it in jars and offer it to people.
Awesome. And just want to say that if anybody is listening who hasn't tried Mama O's, they should definitely get out there and find some. I know you're available now all over the country, right?
Yeah. Well, so far, mainly I'm concentrated in the Midwest, the Northeast, North Atlantic, and the Mid-Atlantic. And I have limited distribution out on the West Coast. So that's why I was out in San Francisco doing the Fancy Food Show and also doing the Good Food Awards.
Let's hear your awards ring there. Can you shake them around? So because this is radio, you can hear the awards. You can't see them.
And because it's radio, that's why I wore the awards.
Kadeem was honored this year at the Good Food Awards a couple of days ago in San Francisco with an award for his baby bok choy kimchi, and was a finalist for his kimchi paste. The Good Food Awards are something that I am personally very involved in. Not that there's any kind of, I didn't vote for Kadeem. I didn't know that it was his thing.
It was a blind tasting.
I'm super excited that he won, but the Brooklyn Kitchen has been a supporter of the Good Food Awards and Seedling Projects for a number of years, and I actually was out there. I was on the same stage as Kadeem. I presented one of the awards, and it's an award that was created in the last 5-6 years to really celebrate makers of good food and of real food and who aren't using, preservatives and who aren't, making items and then rebranding them from other people and who are really working with their hands to make the best food possible. And there's a number of different categories. So in the pickle category, Kadeem won an award. Congratulations.
Thanks. It was really an honor just seeing Carlo Petrini on stage delivering the opening speech was amazing because he dropped just fire in Italian, and then his like hot Italian translator dropping even more fire in English. It was just like, it was really amazing and really inspiring because I think the basic gist is that we all have a responsibility to be stewards of the land and provide food, but provide it responsibly and ethically as well.
Yeah, his speech was incredible. I mean, one of my favorite things about it is, you know, he started off and he said, "I'm going to tell you three things," and then he went on for like 6 or 7 minutes, and I thought, you know, well, maybe, I mean, did he just sort of barrel, is that all three? I'm not really sure. And then he stopped for a second and he said, "Okay, this is my second point." And he went on, you know, it was amazing. And I think that I totally agree with you. I think one of the most amazing things that he talked about is the idea that we are stewards of these things, but that by creating good, real food, we are doing more than just making something delicious and more than just feeding people, that we're providing for people, for the future, that we're providing for a community, that we're providing jobs, that we're taking care of the earth. I mean, that all of these things are wrapped up in what we do as food producers, and it's not just serving somebody something on a plate.
Absolutely. And it's just, you know, trying to do it the right way, like being golden rulers, you know, do unto others as you'd have done to yourself. And that really applies to the mother earth, because once Mother Earth isn't here, then we're not here.
Yeah.
I guess that's why we're trying to figure out how to get to Mars, right?
Yeah, right.
Mess that up too.
Yeah, expand. But you know, I mean, it was an inspiring event. It was a delicious event.
Yeah, super fun, super fun.
Yeah.
The guys from Olympia Provisions were awesome MCs. They killed it with all the jingles and fun times. And then the food, the food after the drinks, the cider, more drinks.
I got back and I felt like so much of the stuff that ends up being served at those kinds of events and the events surrounding them. I mean, the Good Food Awards and then the Fancy Food Show and the Mercantile and just people going out to eat. And, you know, it's a huge celebration, and we're all also working and networking with people and you know, ordering things and receiving orders, placing orders. But I felt like there's almost never enough kimchi or vegetable or fermented food around that. I just, my stomach was like yearning for it when I got back.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think for next year I'm just gonna come out with like kimchi belts, like, you know, it's like a little cup on
totally.
A belt. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, you just dip in after you eat a piece of pork, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe you could do like a, you know, like Go-Gurt. You could do like kimchi in like a Go-Gurt package.
Yeah. Hey, maybe, you know, okay,
yeah, all right.
New for 2017.
Yeah, totally. That way you can just carry it in your pocket when you need a kimchi shot.
Just squeeze.
But I came back and I was just like, man, I need a salad and I need some water.
Yeah.
But I need something that's not, you know, wine or beer or whiskey. Or
yeah, just like sip on some vinegar or something.
Yeah, totally. So that was great. And then you also had a booth at the Fancy Food Show, right?
The Fancy Food Show was crazy, overwhelming. It's 3 days of this giant food show where people come from all over the world and they're selling their wares. And it's really, I gotta say, the most amazing thing about it is it's great, but there's so much crap there. It's like, it's kind of slightly amazing.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, we didn't even, I brought my buyer and my GM from the Brooklyn Kitchen out, and we went to the Good Food Awards, went to the Good Food Mercantile, and we spent a lot of time looking at other stores. Because for us, that's always super important and inspiring. You go to other stores that are doing similar things. We went to Byright, Canyon Market, went to see Fatted Calf, Cheese Plus, El Campo Meats. I mean, you know, looking at all those places, you get inspired, but you also get ideas and you find new product on their shelves. The Fancy Food Show, I have always, it just every year it gets a little bit harder because it's massive. I mean, thousands of vendors and you're walking for days and, you know, you see people that you like. I mean, it would have been nice to see you there. I'm really glad that I got to see you somewhere else and didn't have to go there to hang out with you. But you just look at all this stuff and it goes on and on and on. And my wife describes it, and the same thing happens in the housewares industry at these trade shows. You get this sort of Stockholm syndrome where, like, at the end of day two, you see a product that like seems good.
Right, right.
Because everything else is so bad.
Right, right.
And you're like, oh, this would be great. And you like place an order for it, or you're like, you're actually considering it, and you get home and you just look at it and you're like, what was no, I
yeah.
thinking?
Yeah, that it's just like, I don't know, it's like a ringer in the Special Olympics.
Right.
that's my best, probably worst analogy that ever made.
But I think, you know, I think it's a little different. I mean, as a retailer, for me, going there has its value in seeing people, but I'm not going to pick up new vendors. But I have to assume for you, especially not being from the West, it's probably really good. I mean, I'm assuming that you know, find lots of new accounts and meet lots of new people who might not have known about your product already.
Yeah, absolutely. And what my main mission out there was to get more distribution out there so that I can be in more places and spread the kimchi gospel.
So when you're working with distributors over there, I mean, your product is a fresh product.
Mm-hmm.
It's not shelf stable.
Yeah.
So that presents some logistics issues, right? It has to ship refrigerated cross-country.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a real... It's not my ideal scenario because I would much rather open up a factory out on the West Coast and just because instead of making here, shipping it 3,000 miles, it's in my mind, I think it's better to open something locally, and then this way I just keep the business local. But that also has its challenges too. So that is actually my final goal. But nice. Right now, the plan is to kind of generate the business first. And so if I have to start by shipping things cross country,
right.
And then once I have the business, then I can go. Then I can alter my business model so that I'm able to utilize the customer base that I have to fund opening up a new business out there.
I think that's a great plan. I mean, that sounds like a very solid way to expand. I mean, you know, hopefully there's enough appetite for kimchi. You could have a factory on the West Coast and a factory in Chicago and a factory in Houston. I mean, you know, you could like do all of this stuff locally because having such a great fresh product.
Right.
And then you're cutting down on shipping, you're employing people locally. Exactly. And it gets back a little bit to what Carlo Petrini was talking about, right? That, you know, if you are able to support a community around it, the community is going to support you as well.
Totally, totally. And I think that's big businesses, it's like small business is the new big business. It's like creating multiple smaller businesses that that do support the local economy with jobs, and then you're also buying locally. And it gives it that, you know, gives people this a sense of it's like being the home, you know, being the hometown favorite in every town.
Right. Yeah, that's great. So let's talk for a minute about how you got into kimchi. I mean, you didn't grow up in a kimchi factory. You didn't grow up in a company.
Right. Yeah. Right? I'm the son of a dry cleaner, so that's about as Korean as it gets. and
your folks came to this country in the 70s, right? And you were born here.
Mm-hmm. So I was born in Silver Spring. My sister was actually born in Korea, and then so growing up, I lived a pretty stereotypical suburban life. Went to school, was a skateboarder. That was my thing. And then in college, I got into DJing, and that's all I wanted to be after that was a DJ. So that's what I did. And so I've been a working DJ for over 20 years. And but however, you know, I'm getting a little long in the tooth to be DJing every night. So I started this party called Mixtape Riot, created a band, the B-tards, and we started. I started making music and licensing out to like different TV shows, movies, video games. But the way that Mama O's started was completely by I wouldn't say I guess it was an accident, because I just needed kimchi for myself because all the stuff in the stores is just horrible. And so I asked Mama.
And you were living in New York,
right?
At the time.
Right. So I asked my mom to teach me how to make it. And so what I would do is I would take the Chinatown bus down to DC, and I would bring back a cooler full of kimchi, because when you make kimchi, when you make kimchi at home, you basically make a case at a time, and the case is around 40 to 50 pounds. And so I would bring that back and give it to my friends, and they were like, oh, this is great. You should sell it. And I thought that was a pretty like nifty idea. And I was buying ribs from my butcher, Jeffrey, at Essex Market, who's not around now, but that was the spot in the Lower East Side. And he says to me, and this is my Jeffrey voice, oh, you eat kimchi with rice. You eat that with kimchi and rice. You eat like a king. And so I'm thinking, you know, what do you know about kimchi, 50-year-old Jewish guy with a ponytail? And then I asked him, do you like kimchi? He's like, yeah, I love it. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'll bring some by. So brought some by, checked up on it, and asked him what he thought. And he was like, I love it. And then this is exactly what I said. I said, you know, I sell this shit. And he said, I want to start carrying it. So after that, I had to come up with the name, packaging, incorporate, get insurance, all of that good stuff. And I started doing demos there. And then a friend brought me to Marlon Daughters. I met Carolyn Fidanza over there, and yep, she loved the kimchi. And so from there, another spot. And then eight years later now, I'm doing Whole Foods, Williams-Sonoma, Dina DeLuca, Brooklyn Kitchen, Murray's Cheese, Zabar's, and all of the best spots you want to go to get real good food.
That's great. I mean, it's an inspiring story. I think that there's a lot there about it being something that, you know, you just really loved, right? I mean, you grew up having it. Right. I assume as a kid, there was always your mom's kimchi in the fridge.
Yeah, right? Yeah. My mom's or my grandma's. And the thing is, I really felt sad that the way that kimchi's represented was, the representation of kimchi, it was so bad. And for when I first started the business, I would ask people if they liked kimchi, and and when people would say yeah, I'll just be shocked, because I'm like, why? Because you know, all this stuff out here is horrible, so why do you even like this stuff? So I also felt a little bit of a responsibility as a Korean to try and make a good representation of what is the soul of Korean food, right? Pun intended.
I think that that kimchi, you know, for me in the specialty food sort of business, represents a really interesting case study, because it is something that, you know, obviously is so much a part of Korean culture, Korean mm-hmm. food, Korean life. I mean, it was important. You were dragging a cooler of this stuff on the bus,
yeah,
just so you could have your mom's kimchi. And it's something that in those last 8 years has really exploded. I mean, we have seen it come to a point where, you know, our customers know it, our customers make it,
yeah,
you know, our customers buy your kimchi paste and cabbage because they're like, I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna make this. But they don't just do it once,
yeah,
they do it regularly,
yeah,
and they're not Korean,
yeah. Well the funny thing is that on speaking of talking to people on the plane, waiting for the plane, there's this like 80-year-old grandmother, white grandmother from New Hampshire. And I was talking to her, and I was like, oh, what do you do? She's like, oh, I have a farm. I make kimchi. I make organic kimchi. I'm like, what? Go ahead, Granny. And yeah, she was super into the you know, lacto-fermented foods. And I think that's where I'm lucky, is that people are really becoming more and more aware of the health benefits of kimchi and lacto-fermented foods, and how what we really need to do in order to maintain our health is maintain a healthy gut biome. And yeah, kimchi is great for that, because so it's full of probiotics, but it's also full of prebiotics. And now prebiotics are what probiotics like to eat. And so that makes kimchi a symbiotic food. And now everybody's words with friends game is that much stronger.
Well, thank you, Kadeem. We're going to take a short break here and hear from one of our sponsors at Heritage, and we'll talk more when we come back.
And today's break song is called Novella Glass City by my friend Nair. That's Nire. She is awesome. Look her up. We'll be right back in a few moments.
We'll be right back. Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers, artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen. I've been speaking with Kadeem Oh about growing up Korean and starting Mama O's Kimchi back in 2008. Before the break, we were talking about the probiotic and prebiotic nature of fermented foods. And, you know, it's something that I think a lot about. I mean, I mentioned that we talked earlier about, you know, having like a kimchi shot that you could just eat when you're eating too much salami or whatever. But, you know, there are a lot of what I would say, I don't know how to term this, like traditional, like the way that traditional ethnic groups or whatever foods are eaten used to include something pickled.
Right.
Right? I mean, you go to the Jewish deli, sure. The first thing that hits the table is a plate of pickles.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. And so you're snacking on pickles that are lacto-fermented, that are probiotic, and that's sort of like, you know, that's sort of like starts your, and, you know, and then you're eating that massive corned beef sandwich or whatever.
Right.
You know.
But it sets it up.
Exactly.
And like same thing, sauerkraut, brats and sauerkraut, like with real sauerkraut. Like
when you sit down to a Korean meal, you have kimchi and other banchan, like, as, you know, at the beginning of the meal. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've been sort of coalescing this idea in my brain to like put meals together that are more like that, because I feel like, you know, we've moved into this, certainly I feel like a little bit in the specialty food leaning world where, you know, it's all about the richest, the fattiest, the most intense flavor, you know, all of these things. And I think we need to sort of like, I don't know, dial that back a little bit.
Well, it's you don't even necessarily dial it back, but balance it out. Because if you're going to have all these rich, super rich foods, then have the have some kimchi with it, or have some sauerkraut, or it's funny. I was reading a study about how food like affects you, and basically, if you eat like a bacon, egg, and cheese, it's really bad for you in the morning, but what was surprising is if you had it with some orange juice, the orange juice, it actually helps balance it out. It's not probiotic, but the two
acid,
things,
yeah.
The acid, yeah, absolutely. So, and that's a big thing with Korean food too, is it's not like you never just eat a steak.
Right.
You have steak with rice and everything else. So, and because it just gets so monotonous.
Sure. And I think that there's a place to sort of go with this of like, you know, we're in a position now. I mean, I was saying that like we sell lots of kimchi, lots of kimchi paste at the Brooklyn Kitchen. People are into eating that, but I don't think they're going home and making like a Korean spread.
Right.
They're incorporating these different foods into the way that they're eating at home. And I think that there's somewhere in there, and it's sort of eventually it'll sort of fully coalesce, I think, in my brain of like how to talk about forming a meal.
Yeah,
totally. All these aspects.
It's really interesting because one of the I'm always interested to see how people incorporate kimchi into the American diet, and one of the ways a lot of people's favorites that I've been finding out is eggs with kimchi, avocado, and toast in the morning. And it's a great way to start the day with probiotics. And also, I'm definitely a hot sauce and eggs kind of guy. But this is even better because you get the kick, you get the acidity, but you also get the probiotics too.
Right. I mean, my breakfast this morning was kimchi, a soft-boiled egg, and rice in a bowl.
There you go.
That was it. So talking about cooking with kimchi, I mean, I think that kimchi gets lumped into pickles, mm-hmm. right? I mean, at the Good Food Awards and lots of other places right. because people are looking at it as this sort of finished product. I think we think of these things, they come in a jar, it's not mm-hmm. a sauce.
Right.
It's a finished object just to eat, which is great. I mean, I love eating kimchi mm-hmm. on stuff right out of the jar. But I think that, you know, there's a lot more to it. I mean, yeah. cooking with kimchi as an ingredient
yeah.
opens up a whole new world. And you mentioned that, you know, if you could eat one thing for the rest of your life, it would be kimchi jjigae.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that sounds corny. It sounds like a plug, but it's really my favorite thing to eat. I eat it for breakfast, lunch, dinner. And sometimes I do that because when I make kimchi jjigae, I make a big pot of it, and I just eat it till it's gone. And when I say I eat it till it's gone, I mean I eat it for breakfast, then I eat it for lunch, and then I eat it for dinner. And then
you eat it after DJing.
Yeah, absolutely. perfect drunk food. Yeah. But it's super, super, super simple. What I like to do is I take a pork neck bone, because the meat that's closest to the bone is always the most tenderest and flavorful. And I brown that in a little bit of sesame oil. And then you throw in equal amounts kimchi and water. And that's it. Let it go for like 3 hours. And pork neck bones also, it's super cheap. It's like you can get like enough for like 8 meals for $3. So cheap and good. That's a win-win for me.
Nice. Do you serve anything else in it, like tofu? Do you have anything else in it?
Sometimes, you know, if I'm feeling, you know, feeling extra, you know, snazzy, I'll put some tofu in, some mushrooms. And that's the beauty of it, is that you can jazz it up any way you want to. But the base is, but you can also go very simple. You don't even need to add pork. And if it's a pinch and you want some protein, you can throw in a can of tuna fish, and it's not horrible.
Oh, that sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Can you tell me a little bit about this event that you started? I have to imagine it came out of your work in the music industry, but now you have Kimchi Palooza.
Oh, yeah. So Kimchi Palooza, it started because,
I'm assuming it's not Dave Navarro just eating a lot of kimchi.
No, right? It was I was talking with Jimmy Carbone from Jimmy's Number 43.
Yeah, and Beer Sessions Radio here on Heritage.
Yep, and he was telling me he was doing a new event out on Governor's Island, and I was thinking about doing creating some type of annual event for Mama O's, and he was like, Do it on my thing. And I was like, oh, okay. So the idea was to do something that celebrated kimchi, all things kimchi. And so I came up with Kimchi Palooza. And basically, when it first started, it was a make-your-own kimchi competition. And people brought in their own kimchi. And it was judged by Mama O and some other judges.
Is Mama O a tough judge?
She's tough, but she's not. She's a tough but kind judge. Great. Yes, absolutely. And then I thought the key event would be super spicy kimchi eating challenge, because that was the first year that I debuted the super spicy kimchi that I make with ghost pepper, and I just thought it would be simultaneously hilarious and disgusting to watch people stuff as much kimchi in their faces for 3 minutes and see how much the people can eat.
How many takers did you have? How many competitors were there that first year?
I had like 10 people. Each year I limit it to 10 people, yeah. and they win this giant trophy that declares that they are the that year's Mama O's Super Spicy Kimchi Eating Champion of the Universe, because, I mean, come on, how many of these can there be, right?
Right. Well, we don't know. I mean, there could be.
Right.
It could be alternate universes all over. But we don't know. So it's.
Oh, I didn't say multiverse. I said universe.
That's great. Have you had any repeat competitors?
Last year was the first repeat champion.
Nice.
Uh, Wayne Wonder Algenio.
Two-time champion.
Yeah, two-time champion, big Filipino. And so we'll see what happens this year.
Where's it going to be this year?
I don't know. The past 2 years we've done it at Crown Victoria, and I love the place. This year, this is going to be the sixth year, and I kind of want to go big with it. So we'll see. Yeah, stay tuned.
And when does it usually happens in the summer, right?
In the summer, August, like right before everyone has to start doing stuff in September.
Cool. Awesome. That I'll have to see if I can make it out again this year. I think I was there at the first one.
Yeah.
I think I was at one of those ones on Governor's Island.
Yeah, yeah. It was good times.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, you know, I would definitely encourage everybody to, you know, start boning up now. I mean, buy some super spicy kimchi and, like, eat a little bit every morning just to, like, you know, get yourself ready. It's really spicy, but it is delicious.
Yeah, it's real.
It is super delicious stuff. So we're just about out of time here.
Much to talk about.
I know. I mean, you know, I always feel that way. We could go on and on. But I wanted to find out. So, you know, you had been a DJ. You've had a couple of bands. Are you doing any music now, or is kimchi making sort of take up too much of your time?
Well, I have a pet project that I started a little while ago called K-Hole, and it's Korean insult punk. And the inspiration from that was Korean parents. Korean parents are really good at yelling at their kids, and I got yelled at a lot. But it's funny because in Korean there are these stock words that aren't really it's not like fuck, shit, asshole, whatever the seven words are. And so to me it's just kind of funny. So what I did was I went home and for Thanksgiving a couple years ago, and I made the music, and then I sampled my folks. I told them to make up a story and just yell at me, and so they made a story about me coming home drunk and losing my wife and kids because of this, and it's just super funny. And so it's set to music.
Yeah. Just to clarify, that's not true.
Yeah,
that didn't happen to you.
I have no wife, no kids. No girlfriend either.
Not because you came home drunk. This was
right. Right. Never.
Is it that the insults in Korean are just like there are so many of them in one conversation, or are they creative in and of themselves?
No, it's not. It's just. They're not super. They're like the stock words.
They're like the stock words.
Yeah, but everyone. Every kid has heard them. Every Korean kid has heard them. And it's just really, at this point, I have a good relationship with my folks now so that I don't get yelled at anymore.
So if I go online and I search for K-Hole Kadeem O, will I find this online to listen to?
Yeah, I think you have to like do K-Hole, like the hashtag number one, K-Hole number two. And I made a visual album, so there are four songs out there so far, and it's lo-fi, just punk, fun.
Great.
Stuff.
Cool. I'm going to definitely check it out. Well, thank you, Kadeem, for coming on the show. I hope you get a little sleep. I know the red eye's a little rough. Thanks everyone for listening to Feast Your Ears this week. Big thank you to Kristen Baylor, my producer here, and Jack Inslee, who engineered the show today. And
yeah.
Please take a moment to like the show on Facebook and iTunes, and follow us on Instagram. Talk to you next week.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.